Okay, so we are continuing tonight the fifth class in the Nefesh HaChaim series. We met a number of weeks ago, so I imagine we may have forgot a little bit of information. So we'll, if I'm not mistaken, inside chapter 5, we did the first two paragraphs. Has anybody been, like, marking up exactly where we were inside, or?
I got two.
Page Yud Aleph, right? We're on page,
yeah,
you start on page Yud Aleph. Well, that you're there, Fred.
Yeah.
You turned too much. Yud Aleph.
I have no markings on this page, but it doesn't mean I...
Yud Aleph. You got some markings there, yeah? Where is it? Where are you going?
Reveri Aluria.
Okay, second paragraph. Okay. So we probably did not do more than those two paragraphs. What I'm going to do, I'm going to start again from the beginning of the parak. I'm going to assume, we'll generally just give a slight minor review of the main points, and I'm not going to go in detail. And then we'll push on. The goal would be to at least finish the fifth chapter tonight and get into the difficulty presented in the sixth chapter. And there's a very interesting concept he brings regarding the sin of first man, which we're only a week behind on. So I don't know if we'll be able to get to that or maybe start into that. We'll see how far we can go. Now, there's going to be, like, he's dropping in some mystical concepts here and there where I'm only going to explain as much as you need to know for this chapter now. He'll later on develop it more, and I don't want to get bogged down in areas which are quite interesting but don't relate to the points he's trying to bring home at this point in time. So I'll give some general ideas and the general notions, and more detail we'll have to leave for later. So in starting chapter 5, again, just to recall the general notions that we talked about, the main idea is that man is created in the Tzelem Elohim, in the image of God. And we said the image means similar. Elohim means what? No, what does Elohim mean? The definition Reb Chaim gave in the second chapter. I should, should have given you guys a quiz. That would have been...
Yeah.
Nasty. Maybe next week.
That
next week, be prepared for it. Ten question, true and false. get you guys.
The energy in the world.
Baal HaKochos, master of all forces. Remember, Elohim, master of all forces. And therefore, man is similar to God, that he's the master of all forces. How is he the master of all forces? That all the worlds move based on what man does, right? All of man's actions keep everything running. Now, how that happens, that's what he was going to get involved to in chapter 5. We mentioned the ideas that that everything you do impacts on the world, not to minimize the activities that you do. Not only what you do, but what you think and what you say. They all impact on the world in a similar way in which God impacts on the world. Just like every second of the day is sustained by God's will, every second of your life you're doing things that are either perfecting the world or doing the opposite of perfection to the world. He ended off in chapter 4 with a statement that when it says, when the Almighty blew the soul into man, it said, and Vayehi ha'adam l'nefesh chaya, man was a living soul, which he asked grammatically to say, and there was in man a living soul. Right? There's man and the soul in man. And he answered, no, what the Torah is telling us is just like in a man, within a man, there's a soul that's driving the physical body. So what man is, and man became a living soul, meaning man is what? Man is the soul of the entire worlds. Remember, this is all coming back a little bit, right? Because he's going to come back to this. So I'm trying to remind you a little bit. But he's saying, because man is a partner with God in being the master of all forces, then he becomes like a soul for all the worlds. Just like the soul in the body is what drives the body, right? So now man is that being which drives all the worlds. And he becomes the soul for all the worlds. According to his root. Correct. Very good. Very good. All right. Are we like remembering all this, or should we start back on page 1? We're okay. It's been too much Simchas Torah, too much Sukkos, huh? Okay, so we'll start again from Perek Hey, chapter 5, page Yud Aleph. And again, the purpose of chapter 5 is to explain in two ways how we understand the structure of the human being and what his makeup is and how he was created, that in fact his actions have such effects, as he said in the previous chapters. Okay, the explanation of why it works that way, that man can affect all the worlds that are above him. Okay, that's what he's going to tell us now. So this is what we did already, right? But we're just going to read through it just with the simple translation to just remind you of the ideas and not going into the great detail we went into last time. Yeah?
There's no more.
If you want, you buy the book. What was the book it was? Anthology of Jewish Mysticism. But it's only on the first chapter and not the glosses. Well, that first chapter will probably run us through most of the winter. Anthology of Jewish Mysticism. It'll cost you about, I don't know, $10, $15. And it has the first chapter in English. Okay. So, Umasha also birtsono yisbarach shemo, and that which it came to God's desire, laharkiv es ha'odom ha'tachton, to have man, this lower man who dwells on earth, to be the one laharkiv, to ride, so to speak, and to be connected, l'rashei ha'olamos elyonim, to all the worlds that are way above him, she is nahagu al yado, that they should be ruled by him, not just affected by him, but ruled by him. Every movement of them is determined by what man does. How does this work? So now he brings down the important concepts. Ki yadua b'zohar b'kisve Arizal, we know in the Zohar and in the writings of the Arizal, Rav Yitzchak Luria, b'seder hishtal shalus, this was the two key ideas. We talked about the creation of the world, where there are many worlds. We talked about the concept of tzimtzum, of God's constrainment, of his holy energies, of his spirituality, and constrained to one world, to another world, to continuous worlds that were constrainments of the previous worlds that were created. We talked about the idea of the hishtalshalus, the progression of those worlds, and the hiskashrus, the interconnection and the interrelationships between those worlds. Those are the two concepts, where each world is a constrainment of a previous world. You looking for the Spanish class? Okay, right here. A progression of a world that there's a world above it, and it's a constrainment of it, a little less of that spirituality, a little bit more fitting into the realm of physicality, and also how they're interconnected, right? Shekol Olam, that every Olam, so let's give you a definition. This is one of these mystical terms, Olam, which literally should mean a world, right? But what does it mean, a world? Does it mean earth? Is planet earth an Olam? Right? Sometimes, that's not what it means. The Ramchal, in his work, Derech Hashem, he explains, an Olam is, we'll give you the dictionary definition, so to speak, and we'll work from that. It's a comprehensive conglomerate of details of a particular plane of existence. Okay? It's a grouping of all these details, and it fits into a particular plane of existence. All right, and there are different worlds, which on the next page he's going to talk. We briefly mentioned it last time, and we'll talk about it again. It doesn't literally mean a world, a planet. Therefore, when we use the term Olam Hazeh, this world, we're not talking about planet Earth. We're talking about the entire Milky Way galaxy and the cosmos. All right, what do we mean by a world? So there are many different worlds that start off from God till we come down to this world. Okay, and it's described as four general worlds. Okay, there's different numbers you can nitpick, say five, some say six, it doesn't really matter, some say thousands, which if you really get out, but we'll just play it easy without getting too technical here. Four general worlds is the general way it's brought down. So what happens? So this is the progression and the interconnection of the various world, one world on top of another till we come down what we have in this world as we have. Shekol olam, that each world who misnaheg, every world is directed, besider matzava v'chol prate inyanav, its whole order of behavior. How is this world directed and run? Any world we talk about, it is run how? Kefi nitiyas koach ha'olam she'olav. It is predetermined to a certain degree by the world that is above it. The world that is above it, meaning the higher plane of existence, that world, that plane of existence, gives power of sustenance to the lower plane of existence. Okay, that's what we said is the development of the world. To make a parable, parents, let's say, are the higher plane of existence. What's the lower plane of existence? Children. Parents sustain children, give birth to them, sustain them. Okay, it's not a perfect example because children become parents eventually, but at least to get some analogy as to what we're trying to bring across over here. And how does it exist with it? So those are the two key terms over there. Shemanhigo, that it directs it, kineshama es haguf. Just like a body is directed by the soul, so does a higher world direct a lower world beneath it. Okay? It's exactly the same thing. In other words, you're alive. Your physical body is alive. What keeps it alive? It's the neshama. It's the soul. Now, what do we mean? Do we mean that there's a body and there's a soul shtupped into there? Is that what we mean is happening over there? No. It's not a body plus. It's not a body plus. Because what happens when a person dies? If it's a body plus a soul, what should happen when you die? What?
The body should retain some kind of sentience.
The body should retain some kind of?
Sentience of its own.
What was that word you said?
Sentience.
Sentience. Can you spell that?
C-E-N-T-I-E-N-T-E.
Okay, I learned the word. Thank you.
It's a Star Trek word.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, then I better bone up on that. I'm giving a class on that, so I got to...
Body plus a soul, the soul is part of the body.
So if it's a body plus a soul, so the soul leaves, okay? How do you die? The soul leaves. Now, but if it's a body plus a soul, what should happen to the body? Something should remain in the body. But what happens? The body starts to decompose. Why is the body decomposing? So it doesn't have the soul, so you're not moving around and jumping around. You're saying the soul is the life, okay? So I don't have life, but I'm still a body. I'm not worse than a stiff, right? Let me remain like a table. All right, but what happens is decomposition of the body, right? So it's not that the soul is just adding life, you know, like Coke, right? Coke adds life, right? So a soul isn't like Coke, that it just adds life, right? But it actually gives its physical existence. The soul gives the physical existence to the body. So too with the connection of the worlds. With the connection of worlds, it works the same way. The higher world is giving existence to the lower world, just like the soul gives existence to the body. Okay? Now, it depends how strong that neshama is, will determine how strong that goof will be. Man, the first man before he sinned, he had a tremendous soul. Tremendous soul. And the body he had was not like the body we have now. He lived in a much more metaphysical condition than we live in now. And I don't want to get into all that. That's what Luzzatto talks about in another work. Okay, but he had a much bigger soul before he sinned. And therefore the body was on a different plane of existence. After he sinned, now we come to the plane of existence more towards what we have. All right? So depending on what the nature of the neshama is, that's what the nature of the body will be. Similarly, when we're dealing with different worlds, depending on what forces are in the higher world, that will make a tremendous impact on what's going on in the world below. Question?
By that argument, the animals have to have souls as well, because the animals...
They have minimal, very, very... Yeah, it's a very minimal soul.
Animals' bodies do exactly...
It has the lowest element of soul, of course. It has nefesh. An animal has the lowest element of soul. No question about it. And it does rot as well. A rock, when it falls into disuse, isn't too bad off. Doesn't have, it has some spirituality, but no soul.
The reason the body rots is because they're not being sustained.
By?
Physically.
Why are they not sustained physically? Why? You're exactly right. Why are they not? Why were they sustained physically 5 minutes ago and now they're not?
Because you stopped eating.
Not because you stopped eating.
I guess I'm missing the parallel with regard to the physical.
Because the soul is what is really bringing life into the body. It's giving the body what the body does. Oh, then you're doing other things. You're bringing in externals. We're not talking about bringing in externals. We're just going with the pure body. With the pure body. Right, if you're alive and don't eat for a day, will rigor mortis set in?
No.
If you don't eat for 2 days, will rigor mortis set in? If you don't eat for 3 days, will rigor mortis set in? Is your body going to stink? No. Okay, but once the soul is out, that's what we're trying to show. The soul is what drives the physical. And everything you're telling me, the physical explanation, is because the soul packed out. That's why it's happening, because the soul packed out. When the soul was in, the body was doing that, because of the soul.
And what about,
that's the point.
What about somebody on the line?
Not in the same way. That's a sickness. That's a sickness. That's something else. That's a different thing. That's a different thing. That's God sending in something else for other reasons. That's a different. That's another external factor's coming in here. But it still doesn't get to the point what happens at death. Can't compare that to death. And as long as the soul is there, it's producing a tremendous life force within the person. Even when the person has cancer, it's still producing a tremendous life force. There's other factors within the body that are God sent. That are acting against it. Okay, but once the soul packs out, the whole force of life is gone. That's what we're trying to say. So just like you understand that relationship with the body and the soul, if we talk about the worlds, the higher world is the soul for that lower world. Gives it its life and sustenance. Okay?
What happens with somebody that is on the life support machine? If we take the life support machine away, it's going to die. Then what about the neshama in this case?
Okay, when the body dies, the soul leaves. The soul will leave at the same time.
But if we don't have the
machine? What if you shoot somebody? I mean, there are conditions that cause the soul to leave. The soul will leave. As long as the soul is there. The physical body does die, but it isn't going to rot until the soul will leave.
Oh, okay.
You'll be on the machine, but your soul's still in there, so it's not going to decompose. It's not going to rot yet. Once you die, you die. The soul leaves. Soul leaves it. The soul leaving is the final cause of death.
Then actually, it's not immediately the death. I mean, if somebody dying, it takes time till it starts rotting, until bacteria starts working, and so on.
But it happens
even
pretty
rigor
quick.
Mortis doesn't.
Pretty quick. Pretty quick. They can tell. They can. That's what the whole what do you call those guys?
Morticians,
they can tell you exactly how many hours. They can tell only at death when certain things start kicking
in. An hour
into
of rigor mortis, which is cooling down the body temperature.
That's only related to death, because that's the point the soul leaves. That's what happens. Okay, further. V'chein holech al zeh ha-seder gavoah mel gavoah. So the order goes higher, higher, higher. Worlds upon worlds upon worlds. Ad hu yisbarach shemo, until we come to the Almighty. That he is the Nishmas Kulam. He's the soul of all existence. Okay? Now, we spent a good 45 minutes explaining that paragraph, if you recall, 3 weeks ago. If you're unclear on this, please get tape number 4 and review that. Okay? Tape number 4, maybe someone took it out.
There's only one copy.
There are 2 copies. In the room. They're not filed, so hopefully the library will file it soon. Okay. All right. I'm sure Fred's got a copy. Next paragraph. So now he's going to give you quotes. Now, where does he get all this from? Again, where's Reb Chaim picking this all from? He's getting it all from the mystical literature. And we're going to have 3 separate quotes. So it says, Ayin in the Zohar. We're in the next 3rd paragraph. Look into the Zohar in Breishis. Skip the 2 lines and go to the brackets where we read it in Hebrew. So it says, V'chol olam, and every world that is there, Elyon v'tachton, higher and lower, it all starts, Mereshis sod nekuda, from the very first point, Nekuda Ha'elyona, the highest point that's so, the hidden point. It's very, you know, the idea of a point. A point is the first sense, look, a point, geometrically, right, is the first sense of existence before it expands and becomes a line, right? A dot, right? A dot is pure existence at the beginning without really taking up much space, right? Getting all the fancy words today is great. Singularity. Okay.
How come we're relying on the Big Bang theory without it? I mean, just because there is a very link, is we suddenly finding that this
singularity? Well, I don't know what singularity means, but if he's...
exactly the theory of the Big Bang.
That point. Well, if the Zohar says it and the Torah says it, that's our sources. We don't. This was done before science. The Zohar was written 2,000 years ago.
My question only: how we know that this is this?
We don't know for sure. But it came. It was ex nihilo, something from nothing. So whatever that was. So we mystically call that first point.
Yeah.
That first point does not have to be anything physical yet. Remember, there's metaphysical levels, many that approach before we come even into the physical domain. Right now, we're talking pre-Big Bang. This is pre-Big. Big Bang is only the physical realm. That's the last world.
By the way, the science only talk about several microseconds, /1 million seconds after it's occurred. Before this, they don't talk.
Yeah, okay, so this is before this. So he's saying that very first point of existence, ad sof shel kol hadragos, until we come to the end of all the levels, so we come to this world. Look at the beautiful expression he uses. Kulam heim ze levush leze vze leze. Each world is a garment for the other world. Ze besoch ze, ze besoch ze. This world inside this world, this is a garment for this world. Each one is an end result of the world which is above it. That's very beautiful why the Zohar is referring to this as a garment. Why is he using the expression of a garment? What qualities of a garment would tend to make this description something for us to appreciate what is going on with this progression of worlds? Now we're talking about a garment in relation to a person. So there's an idea of concealment. That's one idea. It's on the one hand shielding, but on the other hand,
before you peel it away,
while you're wearing it, it gives an appearance. It gives an appearance. Your eye is satisfied to see something. You see my back. Well, forget about the face right now to avoid anybody talk. I got a hooded coat on and I'm walking out. Your eye is satisfied that there's a human being there. It sees a human being. Did you see a person? I saw, no you didn't, you saw a coat, but I saw a human being. Oh, you're right, the coat concealed the person, but on the other hand, it told me that there's a person there, unless, you know, it's a machine. But generally speaking, it's a person over there. So that's one idea. Just like the person wears the clothes, but it's more than that. Yeah? Let's go further. Which is which? The clothes and the person, which is the higher world, which is the lower world? This is the tricky part.
Yeah, the inner one, what is higher?
In other words, starting from God is higher worlds. Down, further concealments is lower worlds.
Right.
Okay? Which is analogous to the body and which is the garment?
The lower one, the body.
The body is the lower one, the garment is the higher
one. God would be the body.
So it's very good. We heard two different opinions from more than two people, so that shows us some confusion. For the ones who know it, yes. All right. Let's give some more parallels to make it clearer, okay? But you've got it. Let's put it this way. The clothes take on the shape of what? Of the body. Forget about pre-cut clothes. You take a wrap. Okay, the clothes take on the shape of the body, right? If the clothes are not on the person, what happens to the clothes? It's a pile of laundry.
Right.
All right, that's an important idea. It has no form. All right, so therefore, that world, that lower world, is the garment to the higher world. All right. It's the body that gives the form to the garment. The garment doesn't give form to the body. The body has its form. I put a wrap around. The wrap takes a shape based on the contour of the body that it's going around. And that garment now is formed and shaped because of the form and shape that the body had, not the reverse, unless you're talking about straight jackets. Okay? But otherwise, that's exactly what's happening over there. Right? People wear clothes to reflect their status. You know, you're a wealthy guy, you're wearing certain clothes. You know, you see people driving certain cars, it's going beyond it. Let's stick with clothes. See someone with a Christian Dior garment? It tells me something about the person inside the garment. When you see Levi's, it tells me something else. Right? So although society tells us it's the clothes that make the man, but mystically, the truth is the opposite. It's the man that makes the clothes. Okay, that's what's really happening. What the person wears reflects the nature of the person under the clothes. All right? So it's just how you see a garment is a very good symbolism of worlds, one world on top of the other. Two people can wear a same type of garment, but it will look different. Which phrase? I said so many phrases.
The clothing and the garment.
The man makes the clothes.
But I'm saying how it's worded in the...
In the Zohar?
Yeah.
The Zohar says that each world is a garment, this one to this one. Is a garment, this one to this one. This one inside this one. This one inside this one. So you look at it as something like a... There's different ways. Mystically, they look at it at different angles, and it's hard, I guess, for you to visualize a garment going down. But that's it. It's more concealment. Here's a dot, and now we'll make concentric circles going around. Those are the garments. So where's the source? Is that dot in the middle? All right. What's happening? It keeps getting more concealed, more concealed, more concealed. You pile. Now put a person. Person starts out. He puts his underwear on. Okay? First concealment. Second comes the shirt and pants. Second concealment. Or better yet, it's called the thermal underwear, right? Then comes the shirt and pants. Then comes a sweater. Then comes a jacket. Then comes the winter coat. Layers of wrapping for the mountain climber, right? One layer of concealment over another layer of concealment. Each world is a further layer of concealment. The higher you go up the worlds, the more layers you've peeled off, the closer you're coming to God. Okay, that's the imagery that the Zohar is using over here with the clothing. Okay? So this is clearly, these ideas that Reb Chaim is bringing out are clearly mentioned in the Zohar over here. And then he gets into more, the next paragraph, it gets a little bit more obscure. Ube Idra, that's a part of the Zohar that deals primarily with how God brought creation into being. And we will skip again to the bracketed part. He says, V'chol ha'oros, all the spiritual energies that come, achuzim or zeb or zer, is grasped one light within another light, using words lights, v'or zeb or zer, and this light within another light, u'me'irim zeb azeh, each one giving light, ha'or ha'mizgala, the revealed light is called levush ha'melech. Again, the light's referring to spiritual energies. Which can ultimately, they can be lights of physical energy that you tell, or spiritual energy, right? But the point is, the one that is revealed, the one that humanity is able to see, it is but a garment of the king, but is not the essence of the king, all right? What you do see is the extension of what you don't see. You don't see the king, but you're just seeing the extension that comes out of him. You see the royalty in the person who wears the crown, although you may not see the king. All right? If you wake up one day and you see, wow, man, do I see the providence of God. Wow, look at that tree. Look at that sunrise. All right? That's not, that is, in a sense, a spiritual type of vision, but that is a garment of the king. That too is a garment of the king. It's a level of God which you see, but realizing you're not seeing the ultimate king in the process over here. That's what the next piece of Zohar is telling us here. Ube pratos ha'inyan, and we get next paragraph now, and you get into more detail. Mevor be'etz ha'chaim, in the work Etz ha'chaim, written by Reb Chaim Vital. Shar Pnimis, he's giving you sources now. In the gate of Pnimis, Vechitzonis, Drush Beis, Priyetz Chaim, it's all a bunch of sources. Get to the bottom line. He says, Shechitzonis shel kol partsuf va'olam, the external of every partsuf, I'll have to explain in a minute, and every olam, and every world, mispashet, it spreads out and emanates, next page, umislabes is an enclosed, beha partsuf va'olam shetachtov, around that world that is beneath it, v'nasalo l'pnimis in neshama, and it becomes its pnimis in neshama. So this idea of parsif, I don't want to really spend a lot of time into it, although I spent a lot of time researching it, but it's not worth the time to expend at this point what it's all about. But parsif is basically a concept that the Arizal, parsif means a face, that's what a parsif means, and what a face is, a face represents a totality. In other words, half a face is not a face. Half a face is nose and ears. It's not a face, right? It's an eye, a nostril. A unity that we call a face is when you have all the details. And he calls that mystical phenomena a face. And what he's basically trying to tell us, you know, each world has what we call the 10 sfirot, the 10 spheres and their different characteristics of God. And there's 10 levels. In each world, there is within the world 10 levels. And it goes even further. In every level, there's 10 levels. So it gets even more complicated. But just, you have those 10 levels that starts at the top level is called Keter, and the bottom level is called Malchut. So even though we're dealing with, you have four worlds, within four worlds, there are 10 subdivisions called the Sfirot. So all he's telling you is, within those 10 subdivisions of Sfirot, it's categorized in a second way. Not just as 10 interconnected subdivisions, which each one is its own subdivision. There's a further breakdown of those 10 into 5 general categories. Each one of those 10, there's 5 general categories called a partsuf, a face. So for example, the first Sfira, which is called Keter, is its own subcategory, which is called Arich Anpin, the long face. It's a it's its own contained unit. While the next two sefirot, Bina and Chachma, they form the second subcategory of two more subcategories, which different names. Then the next 6 form another subcategory, and then the 10th one is another subcategory. So in other words, from the 10 levels, we can bring that into a different categorization of 5 subcategories. And what he's trying to tell you with those 5 subcategories is, when you move from one category to another, it's no different than from category 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, it's just 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. When you leave one, the place of interface is the lowest part of the higher subcategory merges with the higher part of the lower subcategory. All right, that's all he's saying with all those fancy words over there. In other words, pretend you have 5 building blocks. Make it like as simple as possible. You have 5 building blocks where, let's say, the bottom block can interconnect. So you put one block on top of another. The bottom part of the top block is what connects and becomes enmeshed with that part of the building block that's above it, the highest part of that. Okay, that's the idea. So again, you see the idea of the interconnections and how one feeds right into the next one. Okay, now we're on to the next part. The next line. Now he gets into the worlds. V'chol ha'olam al's. See, again, it says all sourced in the Zohar, and now he's going to source it in the prophet himself. He's going to source this right into the prophets. He says, V'chol ha'olamas, and all these worlds, nichlalim v'nechlokim l'dalad kiyadua. These main planes of existence are basically in 4 categories. Okay? So before we read what he says, we'll tell you the 4 categories. And it's worth to write down. The top category is called Atzilus, which is understood, I'm just giving you the broadest terms now. It's a universe, a plane of existence of God's projected majesty. Okay, obviously God is on top of this. Okay, or is beyond that. It's the Ein Sof, the pure infinity, which is God, which we have at all no concept of that. But the first area of some type of existence that we could have some comprehension is called Atzilus. It's a universe where it's just pure emanation of majesty. Okay? There is nothing in that world of Atzilus except for the Atzilus itself. It's a whole universe of pure divine glory. Even though there are 10 Sfirot, there are 10 levels within that, but they're of pure glory. They don't produce anything in the world. They're not there of projection, of production. It's pure projection of God's glory. In other words, you look at it, it clearly reflects the connection to God. Right? You know, if you don't understand it, it's also fine. But that's the world of Atzilus. Okay? Then you come to the next world, which is now some things start to happen. That's called the world of Bria, which means creation. It's where creation starts from. Okay? Then below that comes the world of Yetzirah, where now the creation begins to take form. The world of formation. Okay? And finally we get to the world of Asiya, which is the world of activity, and that's the world that we are in. We are in the world of Asiya. Okay, those are the generally, simply put, not getting any highfalutin stuff, those are the four worlds. Each world spilling over into another world. Okay? Now, with this understanding, now, we'll go a little bit further. There are certain entities, I'm just saying this, even though you don't understand it, just so you can appreciate what he is saying and get the concepts. Alright? In these worlds, there are certain entities that live in these worlds. Okay? So, we'll talk about the Ofanim. Those are types of angels, which we'll leave the definition of angels for a little bit later. Angels, they live, we're going from now from the bottom up, they live in the world of Asiya, this lower world. Humans also live in the world of Asiya, but we live at the very bottom of the world of Asiya. Remember, there's all kinds of Sfirot. In the world of Asiya, there are types of angels that are called Ofanim. They're the lowest rung angels, so to speak. They're in the world of Asiya, the lowest world. Another type of angels are called the Chayos. They live in the higher world of Yetzirah. Then there are other entity, when you go up to the world of Bria, you have an entity called the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of glory, the secret of God's throne of glory. And finally we get back up to Atzilus, where there's nothing there besides the Atzilus, besides that projection of God's majesty. Okay? So this world of Atzilus, therefore, is the roots for Bria, okay, and etc., etc., down the line. Okay? Now, we'll read inside and you'll see how this fits in. V'chol ha'olamos, and all the worlds, because he avoids using the traditional four terms, he just talks about the entities that are in those worlds. V'chol ha'olamos nichlalim v'nechlakim l'dalet kiyadu. The worlds are divided up into four. Shehein, he calls them the Ofanim. Okay, the Ofanim, they're in the world of Asiya. V'hachayos, they're in the world of Yetzirah. U'kisei HaKavod, that's in the world, the throne of glory, that's in the world of Briah. V'atzilos Kachi Yisbaruch, and the world of Atzilos, which is directly created from the essence of God. Those are the four worlds. Now, what does he want? What does he prove now? And he's going to say, this is exactly what it says in Ezekiel. If you understand this, then you read the prophecy of Ezekiel. Ezekiel is just telling you straight out this concept. That one world is pulling the strings for the next world. Once you understand these mystical terms, you see this is what the prophecy of what Yechezkel was seeing. The next paragraph, V'nishmas kol echad. Where is the soul of each of these worlds? Hu ha'olam ha'alav. It's the world that is upon it. Right? The higher the world, the more inner it is, the more internal, like the body to the soul paradigm. Kemoshe Nemar, as Ezekiel says, what does Ezekiel say? Ubehinasei hachayos, when the chayos, the angels, which are in which plane? The plane of Yetzirah, they went up. What happens? Yinasu ha'ofanim lumasam. The ofanim, which live in the lower world, they move up in parallel fashion. That's what the prophet says. When the chayos move, the ofanim move. When those things that are in the higher world are moving things, then that affects the lower world that's connected to it, and they move. Ki ruach ha-chaya, because the spirit of the chayot, angels, ba-ofanim, are in the ofanim. It's like the neshama of that lower world. Belechdam, when they go, the higher ones, yelechu, they go. Uba'amdama, when they stop, yamodu, they stop. And now we go to Chayos, which is the second world, yeah? Yeah, so why are these guys doing it, right?
Yeah, you're going
down from the top. Hang on.
Oh, okay, I missed.
You're okay. It's a good question. Just hang on. The Chayos, now the Chayos, which is in the second world from the bottom, Yitzira world. Gam kein misna hagim, they also are conducted al yedei olam hakisei shaleim. They're conducted through what's in the world above them, the world of the throne of glory. Kimo sham razal, as our rabbis say, shakisei no se es no sa'av, that the throne itself carries those that carry it. Because traditionally the chayos are classically the ones in the vision that carry the throne. But as we know, just like with the Levites, when the Levites carried the ark, what does the Talmud tell us? The Levites picked up the ark, but what happened? The ark picked them up. Mm-hmm. I mean, they literally would fly. They'd grasp the ark, and all of a sudden their feet would be off the ground. So although it looks like they're picking up the ark picked them up. So the Chayos, although they are supporting the throne, it's the throne that really is what is supporting them. Okay? Ubezohar Chodesh, and the Zohar says, the Chayos, notlin de notlin lo. That the chayos carry those who carry them, noses and noses som, akise akodesh, noses a chayos, and then the throne carries the chayos. So each world is essentially moving the world below it. Now, we come to the next paragraph. Here's the important paragraph. Benishmas hachayim shel hakise. Now, what is the sustaining force of this second highest world in Bria, which has the throne of glory in it? What is the life force of that? Before we finish the line, what is it? It's the world of Atzilus, right? Now, what do we also know about this world of Atzilus, which is the pure projected majesty of godliness, who sowed Shoresh Ha'elyon, this is the hidden highest root, Shel Klolos Nishmas Yisrael Yachad, of the collective soul of the Jewish people is rooted in that highest world of Atzilus. Meaning all Jewish souls are projections of the Atzilus, of the projected majesty itself. Yes. Yes. Shehu Yoser Gavoa, that is much more higher. Bad English. Umaod nale game hakise, and much more elevated than the throne itself. Shehu ha'adam sha'al hakise. This is the vision of man sitting on the throne, which Ezekiel also saw. Kemo shenemar sham, as Ezekiel in that dream, he says, the aldemus hakise, on the picture of the throne, was an image of a human being. What does that mean? The kisei is in the second world, the world of Bria. And what's sitting on top of that? It's a human being. And obviously that's the world of Atzilus, which is on top. What's a human being doing on the top? Okay, it's not, it's again, a picture of an image of a person, but it's reflecting really the soul, obviously. So the prophecy of Yechezkel has a description of the kisei hakavod, the throne of glory that has a likeness of man on it, teaching us that the soul of how teaching us how high the soul of man is in respect to the other world. So this is what Reb Chaim and what the Zohar is saying. This is what the prophet Ezekiel has been saying all along. If you know some of the mystical terms, that's exactly what the prophet is saying. So now I think your question is answered. If man is the Knesset Yisrael, the congregation of Israel's soul, emanates out of the world of Atzilus. It's up on top. Who's moving the throne? It's mankind. And everything filters down from that. Okay? That's how everything, what happens at world, lowest world, affected by world above, affected by world above, affected by world above. Well, what's the world that's affecting the most is Atzilus. Whose comes out of that? The collective Jewish soul. That's what the prophet Ezekiel is telling us.
Yeah? And how can we be so divided if we come from such a height?
We do have bodies, dear.
So
we will see. We will see. Let's just wait a little bit.
I want to make sure. The collective soul does this Yisroel, protected.
From the world of Atzilus. It's coming out of the world of Atzilus. It's in the world of Atzilus. It's an emanation of the world of Atzilus, which puts it above the Kisei.
This is why actually many poet, Hebrew poet, and also in Jerusalem actually, and it seems like almost a romantic relationship.
For sure, there's a tremendous intimacy. The Zohar, which Reb Chaim will elaborate later, says Yisrael, the Jewish people, the Oraisa and the Torah, the Kutcha Brichu and God, Chadhu, are one. Well, when we get to it, we'll explain it. Even a little bit before, when there's a place. But they're all one. There's an explanation to it. But already you can sense what it is. Oneness is closeness of proximity. Mm-hmm. What's closest to God in all of creation? What is in the Atzilus? That's the collective Jewish soul. And the Torah as well, because the Torah is the blueprint of all of man's God's action, which is also somewhere in the world of Atzilus. Okay, but we're not going to get into that now. But that's exactly what you're saying. This is the basis for the intimate relationship with God. Because you'll see, he's going to keep hammering away at this, but you're on the right tracks. Okay? Now let's go a little bit further. Okay, it's interesting. So now, let's look at the small print. For us young eyes, let's make sure I didn't miss anything here. Okay. Yeah. Now we get to the shoe. Remember that? We talked about the shoe? Okay. Hagah, the gloss. Ki ikar ha'adam. Now here, so this is the first main point. The first main point, after we've explained, there's a progression of worlds. And there's progressions of constraints, clothing on top of clothing, A, and B, how one impacts on the other. Now he's telling you, big factor, the soul of Jewish soul, the collective soul, is right on the top. That puts you in a pretty good position to move things. But not enough yet. Because where are you right now? Down here. Wait a minute, if I'm down here, that's up there, we got a problem here. There's a break in the connection. Okay, I'm down here. What's going on up there isn't affecting me. So now the Hagah, the gloss, has to fill in an important second concept. Hagah means a G-L-O-S-S, a gloss, which is like a sign.